All right, and welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Snack Time with Mike and Ant. I'm one of your co-hosts, Ant Testator, a writer of names and flavor text for Wizard of the Coast and articles of Gathering Magic.
With me,
as always, is the one and only super flavorful and crazy rude master of weens, Mr. Mike Linden.
Snack Attack. So today, we got a bunch of changes going on right now, and I'm excited about them. So I'm Mike Linneman, last name rhymes with cinnamon. I write about art and things. I have the art background from school, and also I was a former art director working on TCGs. Doesn't matter. I did flavor text writing. I sucked at it, as a reminder. But today, Ant and I are arguing about flavor gems. And why that is we're talking about Eldritch Moon and a pretty big plot point that came through. So first of all, you can tell that I sound a little different. First Patreon backed thing, we have our first microphone.
We have our first microphone.
So Ant sounds like he's still in a fishbowl. Nailed it. We need to have like a fishbowl nostalgia episode one day.
We will. One day we'll just, or if we ever do a live episode, we'll have to just put fishbowls on our heads and then do the whole episode live.
That'd be incredible. That'd be utterly incredible. It's like, what are you guys doing? Don't worry about it. Put snacks in them. So you can hear me speaking now, and really, you got to choose which one sounds the best. So this would be version one. This would be version two, which is a little bit different, but you know, maybe it's a little more sportscasty. This is version three, which sounds like I'm literally right behind you, creeping up, which is not so good. But maybe it sounds best as a recording through a podcast, not sure. And this is recording four. And this one sounds more stereo, which I think is also bad because it's gonna pick up milk walking around outside the door. So I think I'm gonna stick with one for now. And we'll figure it out as we go. So that's huge. Patreons, thank you so much. Like, we actually did the thing. Like, we've been trying. We actually promised to do. Like, we're going to upgrade sound. And then Ant's going to upgrade sound. And then we're going to have a traveling microphone that we'll send to artists. So their sound is incredible, too. Because that's such a big deal when the person you call in is, like, on a bad line. And you can't hear them at all. So
not even artists. Just anybody. Anybody that we interview, like... One of the things that, you know, we want to avoid, honestly, is when we're interviewing someone super interesting and, you know, their mic's crackling or cutting out or something, because we're missing those little gems that they're telling us, right? Like, that's the whole point. That's the reason why we're talking to them in the first place. Sometimes it's funny, like when we had Durf on and his mic just imploded. Like, that was a good time.
But I mean, like, if Ant Scott Waters had terrible, terrible sound... Yeah. That would totally ruin that experience. And I mean, you can't really interrupt when he's just discussing something that's just like, oh man, this is so good. How do you interrupt the man and be like, give me a minute, I gotta fix the sound? You just can't. Interestingly enough, that's huge, huge deal. It doesn't seem that big a deal, but for everything we want to do, it matters quite a bit. And especially as we have international people with accents, it's a massive, massive deal because everyone can use Skype. We can send it to people, whatever. So today, we're talking about Eldritch Moon, the story that went on.
The story that came out today.
Ken Troop, what is the quick synopsis? Obviously, the time's going to pass before we post this. Fine. What is the big synopsis of what happened that we didn't know already from the art book?
All right. Well, before we get there, really quickly... just so that everyone understands the reference that you made at the beginning of the episode, the reason Mike and I are arguing over flavor gems is because he was trying to find something that really fit the story today and some of the themes that it touched on.
Right.
And then all of a sudden he told me that he started magic during Future Sight, which, in my opinion...
The second time.
Whatever. In my opinion, that was probably like the absolute worst time.
Like the hardest set to break into.
To come back into the game because...
Right, where, you know, there's weirdness, the frame is off. So I played originally in like 1994. We had Legends around, but no one played it because when you open those packs, you got 6/4 3 color crow worms and no one wanted that crap. I mean, you didn't even know mana drain was a thing because it was, you just didn't see it. So instead, we picked up, the dark packs. This is cool, i.e. why I love Innistrad so much. Legends packs every now and then, we know cheap, but otherwise you got like stupid fourth edition, that sort of stuff, and you know, onward. I left after, you know, when Urza's Block basically really started taking off, simply because I'm just like, oh my god, this is so expensive now for these foils, are just getting out of hand. And then I came back in Future Sight and didn't know what was going on, didn't understand the frames. But then Lorwyn was right after it, and I'm like, oh, okay, I totally understand this. Painterly
Yeah.
qualities, I'm in. I'm hooked, and I've been here since.
It's just so funny that you said that because, like, I started Magic. I got into it a long time ago. Like, friends of my mom had their sons over to our house and they were playing Magic. And that's kind of how I got introduced to it. They were using, you know, super old, like the Dark and Alpha, Beta, whatever cards, probably unsleeved, right?
Nailed it. I
Actually,
mean,
absolutely, they were unsleeved.
yeah, you don't sleeve that ish.
But I got into Magic then. I was into it all the way up until Mirrodin, which is a time when a lot of other people left the game, but they left for, you know, power level reasons, which anyone who knows me knows that that's you I could not be further from caring about power level and things
Yeah,
like that.
ant's not a spike at all, like
Doesn't matter to
0%.
me at all. I left
0%.
mostly because I was in high school and, you know, I was just like I was playing baseball. I just had other things that I was doing. But when I got back into the game was right around when you did, Mike, except I got in at the beginning of Time Spiral, and it was that crazy nostalgia of all the old stuff that I really liked that drew me back in. So, like, Future Sight was pretty cool to me because I was already riding that roller
Hi.
coaster.
Yeah,
But
right.
I get it. Like, if you came on at the end, it'd just be like, what? Like, what is this?
I have no idea what's happening, which was like, oh, okay. It took me like a really long time to really dig back in to be like, why are there planeswalkers in Lorwyn? Like, what? Is
Yeah.
this how it goes? What?
But the reason why this is all important, this crazy segue that we have made, is because Time Spiral as a set in the storyline was incredibly important in that it fundamentally changed the fabric of the multiverse and fundamentally changed the way planeswalkers function,
Right.
enabling us to have planeswalker cards, right?
Yep, pretty
Mike
much.
is under the impression that today's story hints at a potential shift that is on, maybe not at, but close to the level of that event that occurred during Time Spiral, which is known as the Mending.
The Mending, which, you know, I think I talked with it on an MTA podcast where they threw me on the spot. And I'm not a storyline guy. That's established. I'm the art guy. I'm the art fan. Whereas that's why we bring on Carrie every now and then, Carrie Thomas Barkhead, and say, Carrie, what's going on in the story? I literally skim the articles because there's not enough pictures. Like, if they were comic books, I would read the crap out of them each
Mike, what
week.
you should do though, then, is you should create a on your Tumblr, you should just have Magic Story, but like picture book form. And
Like a
just do a
flip
little.
book?
Yeah.
That'd be so good. People would come each week to be like, hey man, is it ready? No, I'm serious. I'm serious. It's actually like a thing that I have to force myself to do because my brain just shuts off. Like if I have to scroll down and it's just all words, I'm just like, oh, done. Which is so terrible because I used to be such a voracious reader.
That is
Like I
terrible.
read so much. Like I have all the Magic novels, but now trying to reread them, I'm like, I need a picture just to
That's
break it up to
terrible.
give me a breather, you know. Otherwise, because of grad school, I just read for retention of like key points.
Hey, you know what you
I
gotta
don't.
do? You gotta read the Odyssey and Onslaught block novels because they have pencil sketches at the beginning of
I
every
know, I
chapter.
know. I've seen those. It's super good.
Yeah, they're cool.
Dude, let me tell you what, I love those little pencil sketches because they're straight out of the style guide.
Yeah, they are. They're sweet too. They're really,
So
really good.
why I chose this is, so I chose Ground Rift, and Ground Rift is one of the examples of the rifts that happens
For
in the
what? Your
men,
flavor gem,
the
right?
flavor gem for the week. Yeah, we
Your
obviously
flavor gem,
we're in a long roundabout story on flavor gems.
yes.
Ground Rift. So what happened? Why did the mending happen and everything fundamentally changed? Time travel, phasing stuff, whatever. Rifts created in like different planes and things, everything was going to fall apart because the nexus of the multiverse, i.e. the center, is Dominaria. That's like Alpha and Beta and Invasion and whatever. All that's in one place. And these rifts were appearing, and like people would go through a rift and disappear or come back in, and all sorts of weird stuff were happening. And ground rift is a really cool, kind of terrible spell that storms, that, you know, rifts are popping up, and you could kind of control them. The more you magic you put in, these more rifts would happen. And what all these planeswalkers did, and some of them died, some of them lost their sparks, was to close all these rifts so that it would never ripple effect and then the entire multiverse would go away. And why I chose that this week is because at the end of this Emrakul story is.
So do you want me to do the synopsis now? Because now it makes sense.
Now it makes sense. Well, you gotta choose your flavor jam. Which one's yours?
Well, mine, I'll just say it at the end.
Fair.
So today's story, spoilers, for those of you who have not read it,
Nailed
The
it.
Promised End by Ken Troup, right? More or less, this is like high 5,000-foot level what happened in the story. Emrakul is fighting the Gatewatch, and Tamiyo is there, and Emrakul basically uses her Enter the Battlefield ability, takes control of Tamiyo, right? Causes her to use her magic in a different way than she would have otherwise used it, and tricked and controlled Tamiyo and the rest of the Gatewatch to seal Emrakul into Innistrad's moon. So the big reveal after like Emrakul was sealed in the moon and everyone was like, "Oh, we did it, we're safe," is that Tamiyo reveals to Jace that the entire time she was being mind controlled and that Emrakul wanted to be sealed into the moon.
Right.
Right? And so there's all of this speculation as to why. Why would that be true? Right? And some people, Mike, now if I'm putting your words in your mouth, let me know.
Word.
But some people like Mike believe that the reason why Emrakul would want to hide in the moon temporarily is to avoid another mending level, multiverse spanning event that would
Correct.
be otherwise detrimental to Emrakul.
Correct. So that's the key. Okay. And is there anything that supports this theory? No is the easy answer. But yes, there is. I mean, we can go a
So for
hundred different
me,
ways
my
here.
flavor gem, right? My flavor gem is Emrakul. The reason I picked Emrakul is that I personally really, really enjoyed the fact that Emrakul actually uses her ability in game.
Right.
Like, in the story, Emrakul does exactly what Emrakul does in game. So, like, if we're playing and MJ is my opponent and she's cosplaying Tamiyo, I play Emrakul, I can totally control her and get her to do whatever I want.
Word, word.
If I want to take her, imprisoned in the moon spell and have my Emrakul get stuck in the moon, I can totally do it. And it's exactly what happened in the story, which I love to see. This is something that when we had Yichao on earlier, we were talking about how his story on Jund very much followed the cards that were in the commander set that he wrote for.
Right.
And, this is something that I think we need to see more of. Like, this is the type of thing that, as a Magic fan, when I come to read Magic story, that's what I want. Like, I want to read I want to read a literal interpretation of the card so that when I actually get them physically and I play them, I can relive the story, right?
Is this not like the original intention of like the game,
Yeah.
right? I mean,
Absolutely.
it's straight up, if you've read the book Arena, literally Magic book number one, that, you know, you can try to do the mail-in rebate for the Mana Crypt card, which you can't do anymore. Trust me, I've tried two or three times. It just gets returned. But if you read through that, you can find literally cards in the game.
Yeah.
And they worked with the designers to say, like, what does this actually do? Like,
But
what does the
they've done,
meat
like, that's
squeak?
something that is used to be very, like, it used to be throughout a lot of the Magic novels, especially, I just started reading the Time Spiral novel again, and
Sure.
like there are slivers, like you can tell when the fungal sliver shows up because they all start attacking each other and they get bigger. You can tell when the flying sliver shows up, like You can literally, as you're reading, you can picture these different cards physically being on the battlefield, and it's such a different and kind of like fresh reading experience, because whereas normal people read a book and they just picture the events happening in their head, you know, like, oh, I'm reading about this train and I'm gonna picture a train and blah blah blah, like that's normal. But like when you're reading a magic story, not only can you picture the action happening, but you can also visualize that battlefield and be like, oh, I know exactly what it's like to summon Emrakul and like take control of my friend and get them to do stuff that I don't want them to do. It adds this additional layer of depth that's really interesting.
Right, and for some people who did miss this in the story, Emrakul is Emiria. Emiria was like the god's name that
On Zendikar.
on Zendikar. That's
Right.
what they called her, as you know, the name is
That she,
forgotten.
Emiria was a personification, right?
Correct.
Which I think is really interesting and is also a key point in today's story. So like I saw a lot of people like on Twitter, they were wondering if Emrakul was actually speaking to Jace, or if Emrakul manifested herself on purpose as
Right.
Emiria or things like that. And in my opinion, that's not, I don't know the answer, the real answer. But in my opinion, that's not what I like what happened. I think it's
How do you mean?
akin. I think it's akin to just human nature. When we see something or encounter something that we don't understand or we don't have a word for yet, we tend to use other things that are similar as a way to explain to somebody what we saw. A
I
perfect example.
myths, biblical stories,
Yeah.
very
Well, a
similar,
perfect
sure.
example is. When I forget the name of the guy, it was like a conquistador, like came and took over the Mayans. They looked out and saw these huge Spanish galleys and these giant wooden ships like out on the ocean. And the Mayans or the Aztecs, I forget which, they didn't have any way of describing these giant man-made boats, because it's just something that they didn't even think was possible and had never seen before. So the way that they wrote about them was they called them floating mountains, or like, you know, clouds that shot fire. Like they had all of these different ways of basically describing something that to them was indescribable. And if we're gonna follow the Lovecraftian kind of story that Emrakul and the Eldrazi are featuring, then you have to think that these Eldrazi titans border on that line of something that is totally indescribable, something that people just, they don't have the words and they don't have the mental capacity to actually fathom like what is actually happening. And so a lot of that interaction was in my opinion, Jace's mind attempting to make sense of something that didn't make sense.
Which is Lovecraftian horror. I mean,
Exactly,
that's
right.
kind of the nature of the beast. If you've actually read any of the original source material that Lovecraft wrote, it's so many friggin' synonyms for the exact same thing. The indescribable, unfathomable creation. And obviously they don't do this throughout. And that's actually one of the critiques that we have of some of these storylines, is that Lovecraftian was all quiet. It was all internal. These people going mad. They didn't know why. And really, only at the end of the story would the creature manifest itself. And then it's like, I can't understand these things.
Right.
Ah, and it just kind of ends. And then they always have like some weird epilogue, like back on Baker Street,
Right.
things, you
The
know,
cat
and
ate the people, and you're like,
yeah, and then
what?
like Jimmy jumped out the window, and the
Yeah.
investigation
But
was
that's what
over.
I loved about the ending of this story, is because, you know, the difference with magic is like they couldn't leave the Eldrazi hanging in the background forever. They needed to bring them to the forefront at some point because players want the card, like, right? We want to be able to summon Emrakul to the battlefield. So there has to be some way to leave a sort of mental cliffhanger where it leaves you guessing and leaves you not fully understanding these creatures that we're not meant to understand, right? So what's the best way to do that? Well, haha, we're going to imprison Emrakul. That makes perfect sense. We already know that that's a way to deal with them because they've been imprisoned before. But then we find out that Emrakul imprisoned herself on purpose, and we're just like, why?
Why
Like
would
it
you
leaves
why
you
would you
with
do that?
that little extra bit of knowledge that causes you to go from totally understanding what's going on and totally understanding the creature to putting you back into that mental state where I feel like I can't even begin to fathom Emrakul. Like, I just don't understand. And that's the beauty of it. That's exactly how I should feel.
This is the exact character in like a 30-minute Saturday morning TV show that you can never kill because it's too strong, it's too big, whatever. It's the person's brother. You can't kill the brother. They're equal power at the end, right? Whatever. It's the Megatron effect. But they still need to have an actual threat. Because right now, you don't ever expect Jace to die. It just won't happen anytime
Plot
soon, if
armor.
ever. Spoiler alert, it won't happen. But starting to look at these stories to say, okay, how are they going to get out of this jam? How is the Gatewatch going to do it? And that's going to go on and on. It could be more interesting, like the story by Ken Troup today, where you get to really get an understanding of how Liliana as a black character works. She is not evil. She's just self-interested. She
She's
cares about.
ambitious.
She's incredibly ambitious. So
Yeah.
I was having a Twitter conversation in DMs about this. I should have had it out in the open about every Olympic athlete is black aligned, every single one of them. And people don't think of them as being black aligned because they're not dark, they're not mischievous, they're not, trying to convince people of doing things. But everything they do is self-centered because they have one goal in mind and they need to accomplish it to the best of their ability.
Yeah.
And having this sort of storyline really allows those deeper conversations, this deeper understanding of our color palette, which is awesome, flavorfully. I love that. But it also shows that you need a bigger and bigger threat all the time. We haven't been back to Dominaria, and if there is a bigger threat than Emrakul, it's going to probably relate to that plane. Something Nicol Bolas does, something with Tezzeret, the Aether, there's something there that's floating that we're missing. Or Phyrexians figure out a way to travel. I mean, then it's like a week by week. Oh, where did the Phyrexians go to this plane now? Oh, we got to obliterate them. Oh, which one are they at now?
Yeah.
And until that happens, where the good guys are chasing the bad guys and preventing them back and forth, and some weeks it's Daleks and some weeks it's whatever the Doctor Who villains are. I don't watch the frickin' program, but sort of thing where you have this like stability of characters that are coming in and out through different planes, and really you get to visit all these planes, but it's always an outside influence that's attacking them, other than. The gods of Theros, where one of them got stuck there, when they had to
Right.
leave for obvious reasons, which I thought was a great nod to bringing Theros back in with Erebos. I have really, really enjoyed that. I thought that was weaved
So,
in super well.
to me, that little segment was the most interesting part of the entire story. Because simply for the fact that first, the more I learn about Gideon, the more I'm really invested in him as a character. Like, I think he has so many more layers that we just don't know about. And like when Jace is experiencing this, weird kind of like visual trippy whatever thing he's doing, I couldn't 100% figure out whether or not this was happening, but I think it had to do with the fact that he was kind of melded with all of their minds at the same time because he was trying to protect them. But in protecting them, he was experiencing the nightmarish visions that they were each experiencing from being that close to Emrakul.
Which
So,
was awesome.
which was really, really cool. Yeah. So, in my opinion, like, I think that that little scene that he saw with Gideon was what Gideon himself was kind of like suffering through, right?
Sure.
And so, those are like Gideon's fears. And what I thought was so interesting was that he's facing Erebos, and Erebos is saying, like, what do you truly desire? And the first thing Gideon says is the obvious thing that we all think is true about him is that, like, he wants to protect everyone. And
Right.
Erebos calls him a liar. He's like, you're lying to me, you're lying to yourself. And he kills one of his friends, right?
Which is awesome.
So then Gideon goes down a level and he says something more selfish. He says, I want to kill you. I want to take my revenge on you. Because Erebos is the reason Gideon's friends are dead. And he's the reason why Gideon left Theros in the first place, right?
Yep.
So now we're starting to see, like, oh, Gideon's actually selfish. He's actually human and wants to get revenge on this person. And again, Erebos is like, no, you're lying. You're lying to me and you're lying to yourself. And before Gideon actually gives that final answer of what he truly desires, like we leave and we go to a different scene. And it's this little mini cliffhanger that has me aching to, like, I want to know so badly what it is that he truly wants, because I think that little tidbit of information is going to totally change him fundamentally as a character.
Yeah, probably. And we haven't seen any sort of like evil white or thing that is maybe undesirable for his character yet, which there's still so much plot to be written with him and Chandra. Like, are they that destined? Are they or aren't they a couple? Which is this comical, like, impulsive person with grounded person. You know, it's kind of the Dharma and Greg effect. We which Family Guy love to make fun of, like, Dharma, why are you standing on the table? You know, where Chandra is that, like, almost childlike innocence, even though she's not. I really want to see more of that, and I'm hoping that in Kaladesh there is that next sort of level. And I know you and I have argued about this, the love and the romance of the game isn't needed because it's built around a duel and around battle, but there is that in the game. It does exist, this brotherly love or parent to child that does happen in cards, though it's become more rare, and I don't think that's actually correct. I think the game definitely has a place for it in some cards, and I think that would be a really, really cool thing. Send your kid to war and they come back and, you know, make the farmstead. We saw a little bit of it in Innistrad, in Kessig sort of life, where the lumberjack with the family and then turns into the werewolf and then it becomes more tragic. But I guess we'll see. I personally, I'm still sticking with it though. I think it's going to be a multiverse changing effect because they mentioned it in the art book and it has been mentioned in all the marketing materials. They wouldn't write that if it weren't true.
I think what's interesting though is like, so the interesting part about that is that Emrakul decided to seal herself on a plane, right? Like it's Innistrad's moon, but the moon is localized to the plane. So that makes me think that whatever event or whatever effect that she's potentially trying to avoid would be something that only occurs in the blind eternities, right? The space between planes where the Eldrazi are normally supposed to be.
Good point.
And so she's hiding out on a plane to avoid something that's happening out there. That's kind of like where I'm thinking. That's where my mind takes me. I'm not sure.
Where Emrakul
Where
indeed, like
Emrakul?
there's
Yeah, I don't
some sort of
know.
fisherman out there, and there was this discussion of whether she's regenerating by her being larger. Our boy Jay talked about that over on Tumblr. That, you
Yeah,
know,
that
since
and that, I'm going to
Emrakul,
put a link to that in the comments because that
sure.
was really cool. That's something like visually you can just kind of trace together Emrakul slowly growing, which I thought was
Well,
pretty cool.
which is arguable too. I mean, even style, even artist styles can it can change in that.
That's true.
It seems too logical with two different cards showing Emrakul being massive for that to be a coincidence for me. If it was one card, I'd be like, no, that's a stylistic difference because I didn't notice it before because it really was stylistic differences from, you know, Mark to Dean to Justin Sweet. No difference. They're both Emrakul. Who cares? But yeah, there's something there about, you know, the hand analogy. You cut off the arms, there's still a body reaching into the pool, and the full thing is the Eldrazi, and what does that mean? But I guess we're going to look forward to it. But I do see the seeds here that are planted for future art books, future things that we can look back and say, ha ha ha, they referenced it here, which is going to be a fun thing. Otherwise, you know, we always do 30-minute episodes. Ant, where can they find you in case they have follow-up questions about this?
So they can find me on Twitter at AntTessitore, and they can also just go to my website at AntTessitore.com.
Finding me, I'm at Vorthos Mike. I'm the super easiest person to find because I have four N's in my last name. You can Google me and it pops up. And I don't know if people knew that. If you ever have art-related things that you remember from the past, just write what the closest thing is, Gathering Magic, in my last name, and it pops up in Google, which is the only way I can find it too. But otherwise, we want to thank Gathering Magic for hosting us. We're always gotta thank our Patreons. We have stuff going out this week. We also have some new secret projects going out that we're gonna have probably ready for at GP Portland. But you'll see when we get there. For those people that are gonna be there, I'm gonna seek you out, which is great. So if you want to join on for the Patreon, I would do that now. And especially, I will have a live art newsletter written at GP Portland in case you want to get something there on the cheap that I will release on site. Because then there's already some stuff I know that's going to be there that's not going to be on people's tables. So you can't wait for it. It's going to be great. Other than that, thanks again to all our Patreons, and thank you for watching today.